Okay, imagine this. You wake up after a life-saving organ transplant, maybe a heart, maybe a kidney, and suddenly you crave foods you always hated. Or maybe you find yourself humming a tune you've never heard before, but it feels really familiar. Sounds like science fiction, right? But, for some transplant recipients, these kinds of experiences, they're apparently very real. And the mystery we're really digging into today is often called cellular memory. It's this pretty astonishing idea that donor organs might actually hold on to some kind of memory, maybe information encoded right in their cells, and that this could then, subtly influence the person who receives the organ.
Precisely. And in this deep dive, we're going to try and peel back the layers on this. It's a really intriguing phenomenon.
Yeah.
We'll explore some of the, compelling stories from recipients themselves, look into the actual molecular mechanisms that some emerging research suggests could explain these shifts. And also, importantly, confront the pretty profound ethical questions this all raises, about donation, science, even our sense of identity.
Okay, let's unpack this then, because we're not just talking about like one or two weird incidents here, are we?
No, not at all.
Many recipients have reported really vivid, lasting changes after their surgery. And these shifts, they range from, new food preferences, like I said, or different emotional responses to things that actually feel like new memories. And it's not just stories. There's data, too, right? I saw a 2024 survey, looked at 47 transplant patients, 23 heart, 24 other organs.
Yeah, that's the one.
And it found that, get this, 89% experienced personality changes after the transplant. 89%.
It's a huge number.
That's staggering. And what really struck me was that these changes, tastes, emotions, sense of identity, they saw them pretty similarly in both the heart and the non-heart recipients. So the takeaway isn't just, a few people feel different. It's that a vast majority are reporting fundamental shifts. That really challenges how we think about, what makes us.
It's a statistic that certainly makes you pause. It really does. And it naturally leads us to, okay, what's the science? Could there actually be something biological going on here?
Right.
And while the idea of, a kidney holding memory still sounds a bit out there.
Yeah, a bit.
There are actually numerous biological mechanisms being explored that could potentially contribute, plausibly contribute.
Okay.
I mean, think about it. Cells aren't just passive blobs. They use these incredibly intricate molecular pathways to encode and store information all the time. So proteins, enzymes involved in signaling, they can carry essentially imprints of past states or interactions.
Imprints. Okay.
When these cells get transplanted, those imprints go with them, and they could potentially influence how the recipient's own cells behave. Some theories, and these are still quite speculative, even suggest donor organs might carry information in specific molecular complexes that could interact with the recipient's brain circuitry. But that's definitely an area needing more research.
So the idea of molecular imprints.
Yeah.
Okay. What else?
Well, then there's epigenetics. This is a huge field now.
Wow.
Think of epigenetic markers like sticky notes or bookmarks on our DNA.
Okay.
They don't change the actual genetic code, the sequence, but they tell genes when to switch on or off. So they act as a kind of memory within the cell itself.
A cellular memory.
Exactly. Yeah. Things like DNA methylation, histone acetylation, these patterns affect which genes are active. And if these donor-specific patterns persist after the transplant, well, you can see how they might transfer certain traits.
Right, by changing which genes are turned on or off in the recipient, kind of subtly influencing things.
Precisely. And we're seeing that some specific epigenetic regulators, think of them as master switches, that are known to play a role in memory formation in, say, neurons in the brain. Similar regulators seem to be active in these donor tissues, too, so there's a potential link there.
Interesting.
And another really fascinating pathway is RNA transfer. Especially non-coding RNAs, like microRNAs.
Okay, RNA, how does that work?
Well, these RNA molecules can carry regulatory information between cells. Think of them like little messenger molecules.
Right.
Donor cells might release these RNAs, perhaps packaged in tiny vesicles called exosomes, like little communication bubbles.
Exosomes.
And these could travel to the recipient cells and influence their gene expression or metabolic activity. Animal studies have even suggested that memory-like behaviors can sometimes be transferred just by injecting RNA, which is pretty astounding.
Wow. Okay. So we've got molecular imprints, these epigenetic sticky notes, RNA messages. But here's where it gets really interesting for me. This idea of neuronal-like functions, specifically the heart brain. I mean, a brain in the heart. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable, isn't it? It's not a brain like the one in our head, obviously, but certain cell types, like cardiomyocytes, the heart muscle cells, and also enteric neurons in our gut, they have properties strikingly similar to brain neurons,
Like what?
like the ability to store and transmit signals. The heart, especially, contains this really sophisticated network of neurons. It's often called the intracardiac nervous system, or, yes, informally, the heart brain. And it's not just a metaphor. This network uses neurotransmitters, the chemical messengers, similar to the ones the brain uses. So when a heart is transplanted, that entire neural network travels with it,
The whole thing.
the whole thing. And the thinking is it might possibly carry emotional patterns, maybe even memory imprints that could then subtly influence the recipient.
That's kind of mind-blowing.
It is. And beyond that, the sources we looked at also touch on other ideas, though some are definitely more speculative.
Like what?
Well, the immune system itself has memory capabilities, right? It remembers pathogens. So maybe donor immune cells interact with the recipient's immune system in ways that influence behavior or perception. It's a thought.
Okay, immune interactions.
Then you get into things like biophysical memory or biochemical resonance, the idea that cells might communicate through really subtle biochemical signals or maybe even electromagnetic fields. These ideas are pretty far out there for most scientists.
Right, that sounds very hypothetical.
Extremely. And then there's the really controversial one, water memory.
Yeah.
This references the work of Nobel laureate Luc Montagnier, suggesting water itself can somehow encode and store information.
Water memory. Okay,
Oh,
that sounds controversial is probably the right word.
definitely.
How do ideas like that, especially water memory, land with most scientists? Is there a clear line here between, an intriguing possibility and something that's just not really science?
That's a great question. And yeah, there's definitely a spectrum. Ideas like water memory are, frankly, highly debated and generally not accepted by the mainstream scientific community,
Why not?
primarily due to a lack of reproducible, strong, peer-reviewed evidence. They tend to fall into that very speculative, you could say, frontier area of research that needs much, much more rigorous validation before anyone takes it seriously.
Okay.
Whereas the mechanisms we talked about earlier, epigenetics, RNA transfer, even the intracardiac nervous system, while still complex and needing more study, they have a, let's say, a stronger foundation in established biology.
Right, they're built on things we kind of already know exist and function in certain ways.
Exactly. But even with those, it's clear the overall picture of cellular memory, if it exists in this way, is incredibly complex and still very much in its infancy. We're
Yeah,
just starting
well.
to ask the right questions.
So, given all the stories, these fascinating, if sometimes theoretical mechanisms, where do we actually stand with hard scientific proof right now?
Yeah, that's the crucial question. And the honest answer is, we don't have definitive proof. Most of the reports we have right now are retrospective, looking back after the
No
fact.
anecdotes.
Anecdotes, case reports, and those small-scale studies, like the survey you mentioned, they're intriguing, they raise flags, they suggest something might be happening, but they don't prove cause and effect.
So what's needed then?
There's an urgent need for more robust prospective studies, studies designed before the transplant to track things over time.
Okay, like what specifically?
Well, you'd want comprehensive psychological assessments, baseline tests of both donors and recipients before the surgery.
Ah, okay. Compare before and after properly.
Exactly. Then you need detailed genomic and epigenetic profiling of both donor tissue and recipient blood over time, serial behavioral testing to track any changes systematically, and crucially, getting corroboration from family members to verify reported shifts. Is this real or just subjective feeling?
Makes sense.
And alongside the human studies, we need better molecular tracing in the lab, tracking those exosomes, RNAs, proteins, figuring out if signals from the donor organ are actually reaching, say, the recipient's brain, and critically, developing animal models.
Animal models? Why?
Because you can do controlled experiments, you can transplant organs between genetically similar animals, control for variables, and directly test if memory-like traits or behaviors transfer. That's very difficult, ethically impossible, really, in human.
Right. You can't exactly do control groups with human lives.
Precisely. So lots of work still needed on the basic science front.
Okay. But this whole discussion inevitably leads us somewhere else, too, doesn't it? The ethics.
Absolutely. It's huge. If cellular memory and these personality shifts are even a possibility, we face some really significant ethical dilemmas.
That's us.
Well, consider this. Should patients be explicitly told before a transplant that they might experience personality changes? That their tastes might change, their emotions, maybe even their sense of self?
Wow. How would that affect informed consent? I mean, consenting to save your life is one thing. Consenting to potentially becoming different.
Exactly. It complicates informed consent significantly. And what about the mental health care provided after the transplant? Do we need specific support systems for people grappling with these kinds of identity shifts?
Yeah.
And then there's donor anonymity. It's a cornerstone of many transplant systems. But what if a recipient starts exhibiting very specific traits or, heaven forbid, memories that seem linked to the donor? Does that challenge anonymity?
Oh, absolutely. And what if those traits are memories that surface?
Yeah.
What if they really conflict with the recipient's own deeply held values or sense of who they are? That could be incredibly distressing.
Deeply distressing. You've really hit on the core ethical challenge there. If someone's personality is genuinely shifting, partly due to the donated organ, it changes everything about how we view consent, identity, responsibility.
It really underscores the need for that post-transplant psychological support you mentioned, not just as an add-on, but as a standard part of care. Helping people integrate these experiences, whatever their cause, seems crucial.
Absolutely crucial. And it suggests that our medical ethics frameworks, our transplant policies, they might need updating as our understanding evolves. This isn't just about replacing a faulty part anymore. It touches the mind, the self.
We've definitely explored an incredible frontier today. I mean, where the act of saving a life might just possibly blur the lines between minds, bodies, even memories. It's a journey from these really compelling personal stories to the, you know, intricate dance of molecules and maybe even neurons.
It really is. And this whole debate, it opens up these incredibly deep questions about consciousness itself, doesn't it?
How so?
Well, could organs besides the brain actually carry information related to identity? Could these mechanisms we discussed, epigenetics, RNA, the heart's neural network, could they genuinely challenge our traditional brain-centric view of what it means to be you?
Is identity stored only in the brain, or is it more distributed?
Exactly. Whether cellular memory turns out to be a powerful metaphor or a literal molecular reality, It clearly demands two things: continued rigorous scientific investigation and really profound ethical reflection. It pushes us to consider that maybe, just maybe, our sense of self is more interwoven with our entire biology than we ever thought possible.
That is definitely a powerful thought to leave everyone with. We really encourage you, our listeners, to keep pondering the surprising intersection where biology meets identity. Stay curious about these frontiers of medical science. It's truly fascinating stuff.